What a game. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. You guys looking especially dapper today. Max in the three-piece, very handsome. Stephen A., the gray monochromatic. I think I need to go shopping. I feel like I don't fit in right now. But that's not the focus. Joel Embiid, fellas, had himself a night. Donovan
Molly,
Mitchell.
You look good in everything.
How about it? Salty getting ejected. Let's hear from Donovan right now.
I'm never ever want to blame a ref, to blame an official. I could say we could have done more, but this is getting out of hand. You know, there have been games like this that we've won. There have been games like this that we've lost. But this whole refereeing stuff and the way we're nice, we don't complain, we don't get frustrated. You know, we fight through things. And the fact that we just continually get screwed in a way by this, you know, like we won this game, in my personal opinion, you know. But like I said, I'm gonna give them credit. They won, whatever, cool. But like this is it's a consistent thing, and you know the question is can we do it? Can we sustain it? Are we for real number one? Like yeah, the hell we are, and it's getting ridiculous, KK. That this is what's happening. You know what I mean? We have a whole second half of the season to go and get ready for, but like I'm sick of it. To be honest with you, we all are. You know, and I think this is something that just it eats me. It eats at me, man. And it's I don't y'all know what it is. We all know what it is, but it's really getting out of hand. It's really, really, really getting out of hand. And the league needs to do something about this because I want to see the last 2-minute report. I want to see it, but it's getting out of hand.
Max, he's not acting there. You can visibly see the frustration. Do you think Mitchell's right?
No, I don't. And let me say, I don't think Donovan Mitchell's right. I'm a huge Donovan Mitchell fan. Talk about a young superstar who rises to the occasion, no doubt. And I get it. You're playing in Utah. It's not the most glamorous market. The games are on late, your home games. A lot of people don't see it. You feel like you're not getting the respect you deserve. Maybe there are a couple ticky-tack calls, so you're frustrated. But Stephen A., that's not really what happened last night. Donovan Mitchell got locked up down the stretch. Like they were winning, and then really, really good defense was played, and he did not respond as he normally does, which is to overcome it. So he's frustrated. No, I don't think you could point to the officials in this game and say they're the reason. And especially what I don't like about it is these are the two conference powers at the moment. Even if you and I believe, hey, AD's healthy, it's going to be Lakers and Nets in the finals. At this moment, this game was between the two conference powers. It's like the championship game of the first half of the season. And in a game like that, when the pressure is high and the refs may blow a fit, you know, something here or there.
Excuse me.
You don't make excuses
Bless
for
you.
Losing like that. Like he had an offensive foul charged against him, health, Stephen A. He had an offensive foul charged against him that he complained about. And it was an offensive foul. He committed an offensive foul. Is it always, are you always going to get the whistle there in that situation? Not always. But he got it there. Stephen A., the story of the game was Ben Simmons' defense, sometimes on Donovan Mitchell, and Joel Embiid. Embiid was the story of the game. He willed the Sixers to overtime and then beat them. And it sounds like sour grapes from Donovan. Great guy. Like, great player, love him as a player. You hear nothing but great things about him as a person. I think these are sour grapes.
I completely disagree with you because he was talking about something that he believes has been going on throughout the season. He wasn't complaining about just one game. He was just fed up because he's talking about a litany of issues that have involved officials throughout this NBA season. And players talk to one another. You watch the games. I watch the games. We see what the hell is going on. The officials are too excessive. I'm not going to even get into the particulars of last night because it's a bigger issue going on that I think needs to be brought to the forefront. Whether it's the NBA's fault because they're bringing a heavy hand on the officials or whether it's the officials being soft mentally and being overly sensitive to every little thing that's going on with these players. We got a problem in the National Basketball Association right now when it comes to these officials. Listen, the other night, I watched the Los Angeles Lakers go up against Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns, and I brought this up yesterday. And we're talking about the Phoenix Suns being relevant, being exceptionally well coached by Monty Williams, having a star on their squad in Devin Booker. And for some unforeseen reason, only known to the officials, Devin Booker gets ejected. There's not fisticuffs going on here. There's not a fight that broke out or anything like that. What the hell is he getting ejected for? It's bad enough we don't have the fans in attendance because of COVID-19 for the most part. But then on top of it all, you're asking people to watch your product at home on television. And one of the stars, you're going to eject him for that reason? Donovan Mitchell is playing last night. It's overtime. They're balling. They're going at each other. Embiid is in the midst of a 40-19 performance. Ben Simmons, like you said, was balling out defensively. Donovan Mitchell had about 33 points, but it was on 34 shots, which isn't that impressive. I get it. But damn it, he's still Donovan Mitchell. And when you talk about the Utah Jazz, and you're talking about them being in a small market, and obviously people not really rooting for them per se, because nobody wants to see Utah in the finals, because that's what they were alluding to, then you know what? We have to understand that, and we have to say, okay, wait a minute, let's pay attention to what's going on here. Donovan Mitchell gets ejected in overtime of a game? Are you kidding me? Donovan Mitchell, the Utah Jazz. You want people to pay attention, watch the Utah Jazz, and you're going to throw their star out of a game for what exactly? And this is the kind of stuff that's been going on for quite a long time. It started regressing, obviously, because of the malice at the Palace in Auburn Hills from years ago. With Ron Artest and those boys running into the stands, we got all of that. The dress code soon followed and all of this other stuff. We got all of that, too. You want to ingratiate yourself with the masses in America, okay, because over 60% of the American population is white. You got black folks out there in the NBA. You know, when they got into the fight, some folks said, hey, you know what, this could alienate the masses from really supporting your product. We got it then. But now we're talking about the year 2021, and you literally can get thrown out of a game for passing gas. I mean, you can't even sit up there and summarily dismiss that notion, because you see too many ejections, too many technical fouls being handed out, and you find yourself scratching your head. For what? For what? The other day, Montrezl Harrell got a technical foul for screaming and one after he made a basket. What? What? That's what we're doing to these folks? And this is the kind of stuff that Draymond Green was alluding to when he talked about, he wasn't really talking about the officials that particular day, but he talked about how all the heat gets brought to bear on players the second they do anything wrong in the slightest fashion. But anybody else can do something, and guess what? You can get away with it. A team can sit up there and act any old way, but if a player conducts himself in the same way, it's a problem. The players can argue with one another and literally having fun with one another, being competitive with one another. Talking trash is a part of competitive sports. We get that. But now folks want to take that out of the game too. It's getting ridiculous. And that's why I don't disagree with Donovan Mitchell. I understand your point, Max, because if you're looking at last night's game on his face, all of those points are salient points. I'm not here to refute that. I'm just saying, if you listen to Donovan Mitchell, he was talking about a bigger picture that transcended this one game. This one game was the final straw, which indicates that something's been going on throughout this league. And I've spoken to many players this year that have been complaining more about officials than ever before. And the officials will say, you have no idea what these players say to us. You have no idea how they get at us. It's ridiculous, and we're perfectly justified in going right back at them. But in the end, We want to see the players. And you know what? You got to figure out a way to keep them in the damn game instead of ejecting them from the game and robbing the
figuring
fans
out a way,
of what we want to see.
Figuring out a way to keep them in the game is a real thing. The players also have to figure out a way to stay in the game. This goes back to your and my ongoing debate about Draymond Green in 16. When LeBron craftily, he was crafty about antagonizing Draymond. Draymond lost his cool, got a technical. He had so many, it resulted in the suspension, right? And then LeBron went on to win the championship. Draymond had to keep his cool. Donovan, like, if you want to make this point, Stephen A., and you did make this point the other day, I'm not saying you didn't, but this was the right point to make about the Devin Booker game. What did Devin Booker get thrown out for? Stop that. And they were up 7 at the time, the whole thing. This was different. Donovan, what I saw last night was Donovan Mitchell, who, even though he was taking a lot of shots to score, he had his team winning the game, and then, as Ben Simmons' defense intensified and Joel Embiid, really the two best players on the floor, both on the Sixers. Defense intensified. All of a sudden, Donovan Mitchell had a stretch of possession after possession after possession where he didn't get it done. Turned the ball over, took ill-advised shots, missed shots. And Donovan Mitchell can take those shots because he can also hit them. He's a good bad shot maker. Like, he could do that, but he was missing them. He was not playing well. They were coming away possession after possession with no points, and it was largely on Donovan Mitchell, who had to deal with Ben Simmons. So in those circumstances, when you see a frustrated superstar getting good defense played on him and he's complaining to the refs and complaining to the refs and complaining to the refs, that's different. That's a learning experience for him. He's got to know how to walk that line, because this wasn't Devin Booker, Stephen A. When Devin Booker did, I was like, really? Donovan Mitchell, I'm like, yeah, man, he's beefing a lot. And he's not always justified in the beef. Sometimes, dude, that was an offensive foul. Like, you put your arms around Ben Simmons, it's an offensive foul. So
then how do you explain that?
That game to me is not the game to make that point on.
That's not the game to make that point. The reality is that he wasn't the only one that made that point. Rudy Gobert made a point as well. You're going to say it's because Embiid dropped 40 and 19 on him? You can look at it that way, but they're talking about what transpired. No, because they're 27-9. They're the best team in basketball. It's one game during the regular season. Why would they pick this game to all of a sudden lament about everything that's been going on? It wasn't just about the game. It was still a hard-fought game. They didn't get blown out. They felt that the game was in their grasp, that they could have won the game, regardless of what transpired. And in the end, that's what it comes down to. It's not for you to look at them and to say, okay, it's just sour grapes. Wait a minute. It's a regular season game. A playoff game, you might have a bigger point. But a regular season game where they end up 27-9, it's not that big of a deal. The fact of the matter is that they're talking about what a lot of players in the league this year have been playing, that have been complaining about.
And I respect
that. And it's the officiating. It's bad officiating. And on top of it all, they've gotten excessive to the point where they're ejecting dudes and they're robbing the fans of the ability to see the people we want to see.
I respect that. I think that's a real point. But to me, the takeaway, if I'm Donovan Mitchell, is not pouting, oh, we don't get calls because we play for Utah and not for the Lakers or something like that. It's if we're in a tight playoff game or a finals game with these dudes, because that's not impossible, and Ben Simmons is locking me up possession after possession after possession, I can't lose my cool with the refs. That's the takeaway for
me. I got to give Donovan Mitchell more respect than that and believe that he would give Ben Simmons his props as opposed to complaining to the official if Ben Simmons did a good job on him. He's a star in this league. He'll get him another time. That's how you got to look at it. You can't disrespect the brother and think that, oh, because he was on lock and key for a quarter, all of a sudden he going to gripe.
Right.
He deserves better than that. His resume says he deserves better than that.
Yeah, he's played 281 games, never had been ejected until, of course, last night. But let's get to the other side, fellas, because I want to focus on Joel Embiid. He had himself a night. 40 points, 19 rebounds. Stephen A., did Embiid embarrass the Jazz last night?
He embarrassed Rudy Gobert, I can tell you that much. Rudy Gobert didn't look like the defensive player of the year last night. I can tell you that much. It's amazing what happens when you go up against somebody your own size. Okay, you don't look as formidable as we know Rudy Gobert to be on the defensive end of the floor. Joel Embiid is just having a sensational season. There's just no denying it. And everybody he goes up against, you know what, particularly guys his size, he just abuses them and he shows his skill set. So I'm not here to refute that by any stretch of the imagination. I think when you look at Embiid and what he brings to the table, especially against Rudy Gobert last night, I wouldn't say he embarrassed the Jazz, because he didn't. It was a competitive game, and we understand that. It took overtime in order to win this bad boy. But what I will tell you is that he definitely showed there's levels to this job description known as being big boys in the National Basketball Association. Rudy Gobert averages 14 and 13 on the season. He's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate every year. He's lethal and he's formidable on the defensive end of the floor, except for when he goes up against Joel Embiid. It's a different animal, and that's what we witnessed last night.
The only reason I'll say Embiid did not embarrass the Jazz and Gobert last night is because this is what Shaq's been talking about in regard to Embiid this entire time. He showed flashes of this in his career so far. This year he got in shape. Doc Rivers is the coach now. He's surrounded by shooters. And the funny thing about Embiid and Gobert is they both in the past have been really effort-giving defensive players and a little lazy on the offense, both of them. Like, I've watched them both and thought, you could, Embiid didn't want to get down low and post up more. It takes more effort, more energy. And Gobert just generally. This year, not so. Embiid is doing what Shaq always said, not having flashes, not having a game or two, do it night in and night out. This is what Shaq's been talking about. So Stephen A., he's been doing it. And he has that thing in him that a lot of great, most greats have, where he wants to get the dude who's guarding him. What'd he say about Miles Turner when he gave the Pacers that work? He said, oh, he's been, but I've dominated him since I came in the league. He's looking at Gobert. Oh, he makes all NBA defense, second team, third team, whatever. And I don't? No. I'm a better defensive player than him, let alone offensive. He's got everybody in his sight, Stephen A. It's like, remember Predator 2 when Danny Glover finally got on the spaceship, on the Predator ship? And he saw all the pelts on the wall. You saw Alien, and you saw, like, E.T., and you saw how Predator had been hunting all these people. This is what Embiid is doing. He's hanging pelts on the wall of his ship. Right there, that's Gobert. That's Turner. One after another. And there's no answer in the NBA for Embiid right now. The league's not built to deal with him. There's no one his size who can do what he does. He's shooting from the outside. He's killing you on the inside. He's defending, maybe the best defender in the game this year, if it's not Simmons. He's just doing this to everyone. I don't know if you get embarrassed by him because he's doing it. In that case, he's embarrassing the whole league, all the bigs.
Well, I will tell you this. It really, really highlights the difference between Brett Brown and Doc Rivers, because Embiid is not doing anything that we haven't seen in his game before. We just wanted him to do more of what he needed to do, and he wouldn't do it. But Doc Rivers comes there, mm-hmm. and Doc Rivers demands he get his behind in the post. He demands that he's in shape. He demands that he's more accountable. He demands that he leads better. And all of a sudden, you see a difference. Now, obviously, it helps that you've got shooters surrounding him. Tobias Harris seems to play at his best when he's being coached by Doc Rivers, because he was having his best year when he was a Clipper with Doc Rivers. And now that he's reunited with Doc Rivers in Philadelphia, look at the kind of year he's having. Seth Curry is one of the great shooters in the game, and we understand that, and look at how he's evolved as a player. But Doc Rivers basically is in a situation where he's got Embiid's ear, and he's held Embiid accountable, and Embiid has listened, because I'm not seeing anything that Embiid is doing that he couldn't do, because I saw flashes of that throughout his career. We kept asking, do it more, do it more, do it more. He's just doing it more now, which means he's being held accountable, mm-hmm. and that's really what this is about.
And Vegas is taking notice, because the only player with better MVP odds than Joel Embiid is one LeBron James. Fellas, we got a solid slate next week. Look at this. Monday, Lakers owner and president Jeannie Buss will join us to talk about her team's chances of a championship repeat. Then on Thursday, we approach the anniversary of last year's sports shutdown. I am so excited for this. Dr. Anthony Fauci will stop by to tell us if sports will ever be the same again. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
James Harden back in H-Town last night. He received a mixed reaction from Rockets fans who greeted him with both cheers and boos as the former MVP returned to face his former team for the first time since his request to be traded to the Brooklyn Nets was granted just 7 weeks ago. Stephen A. He had quite a game. Do you think Harden's the MVP?
So far, I think he is. I mean, I look at Embiid and he's been a monster and I get all of that. But I think about Harden and what he has been doing and how sensational he has been, particularly with the absence of Kevin Durant. And I say, yeah, there's no denying what Embiid has brought to the table, and I'm not here to do that. What I'm here to do is recognize what we've seen from James Harden since he's become a Brooklyn Net. The brother's averaging about 25 and 11, leading the league in assist, running the show in Brooklyn. I will remind everybody, Kyrie Irving's missed about 12 games. Kevin Durant has missed about 17 or 18 games. And yet the Brooklyn Nets, winners of 9 of their last 10, by the way, are a half game behind the Philadelphia 76ers in the Eastern Conference. And that's with Harden not having Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving for the most part. So I look at it from that standpoint and I say, hey, you know what? Right now, the way that he's looking, as great as Embiid has looked and what have you, Philadelphia has struggled, been on a little roller coaster as of late, regardless of what last night's victory entails. That has not been the case with the Brooklyn Nets, led by James Harden. James Harden is having an outstanding season, and right now, doing what he has been doing without the services of Kevin Durant and to some degree Kyrie Irving, I think that's what ultimately elevates him in the MVP conversation. It's fluid. It moves every week. We get him, LeBron, and Embiid. But right now, at this particular moment in time, that's how I'm looking at James Harden.
I think Joel Embiid is the MVP. And I don't think it has been fluid, actually. I think Joel Embiid took that lead early in the season and has never relinquished it. I think wire to wire so far, he's been the MVP of the NBA. By the way, just like you gave respect to Embiid, I'm not here to down Harden. I think Harden's playing the best basketball of his career, and that's saying a whole lot, because the guy's not only an MVP, but perennially, he is maybe deserving of the MVP. He's right there of the regular season. He's either the MVP or the runner-up or the third place every year. I think this is the best he's ever played. He's been amazing. But Stephen A., he missed the first part of the season with the Nets. You know, Embiid's been with the Sixers the entire time, and the Sixers have the best record in the conference, and the Sixers beat the Nets when they last played, and they just beat Utah. And they did it because Joel Embiid willed them back in the game down the stretch in the fourth quarter, and he took them to overtime with a run back three. I mean, this dude is doing everything. 40 and 19 in overtime last night, but for the season, 30, 11 and a half with a block and a half. And Stephen A., that's just on the offensive end. If you want to argue Harden because he's a floor general, and by the way, LeBron, I know it gets boring, but LeBron's right there every year. Or because of all the responsibility they have in the offense, that's fine. But let's stay to Harden for a second because LeBron also defends. Harden's an underrated defender. Like, I'm almost on the verge of saying Harden's a pretty good defender, but I don't know if I'm there yet, but he's certainly not a bad defender. Joel Embiid might be legitimately the best defensive player in basketball. He may have the greatest defensive impact in the NBA. So you got the offense, which at most is very close. Maybe it's Embiid, maybe it's Harden. I won't fight you too hard if you say Harden on offense by a very, very little bit. Even though Embiid's efficiency numbers are better than Harden's and everything. Embiid's shooting over 40% from three, all that. But on defense, it's not close. So there's offense and there's defense and there's your team's record and there's the fact that Embiid has been there the whole season. I can't, as great as Harden's been, I can't make the argument for him over Embiid and not over LeBron either. I know Harden's gotten to a new team. That's a big thing to show up in a new place and not miss a beat. Start dropping triple-doubles with 30 points and wins. I get it. But LeBron's missed one game this season for the Lakers and has been doing everything Harden's been doing on offense and has been playing better defense. I can't give it to Harden this year's MVP so far.
Well, listen, I hear where you're coming from. With Harden, again, if Kevin Durant was in there, I'd feel differently. But because Kevin Durant is out and him continuing to play the way that he's played and amping it up and listening to the players talk about him and the leadership that he's provided and the point guard duties that he's obviously partaken, I got to give credit where credit is due. In terms of Joel Embiid as a defensive wizard, He's a big-time defensive player, deserves a lot of credit. But let's not call him the best defensive player on the Sixers. We know better than that. It's Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is the best defensive player. Ben Simmons is going to win Defensive Player of the Year if anybody's paying attention. He's been absolutely great. And so I don't think there's any denying that. And then you look at the, you know, overtime, for example, when they went to Tobias Harris four straight times. Yeah, Joel Embiid can do some things, but the guys around him are doing so much. People don't realize, even though he's averaging 30 and 11, shooting 42%, nearly 42% for three-point range, which is not something we're accustomed to seeing from Joel Embiid. The reality is that the coaching combined with the personnel that he's had around him this particular season, with what Doc Rivers, Elton Brand, and Daryl Morey have done, deserves a lot of kudos for what's transpiring there. In the case of James Harden literally has found himself having to hold down the fort and pick up the slack until Kyrie can go at it for you night in and night out, as well as Kevin Durant ultimately coming back. So all of those things are things that need to be taken into consideration as we look at what Brooklyn is doing. They've won 10 of their last 11 games. They're only a half game out of the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. I look at it from that perspective based on those circumstances, and I think the argument is sound on behalf of James Harden.
Well, I'll say this for Harden. Embiid's the MVP to me. Then at this moment, LeBron, but Harden's in the conversation. And I've never, I don't think, even heard of something like this, where a guy, not mid-season exactly, but once a nice little part of the season has already been played, switches teams, but not only switches teams, plays his way out of town. Like, made it very clear with his play and his attitude, he did not want to be there. And Harden was toxic at that moment. You heard all around the league, guys didn't even want him to come to that town. They didn't want to play with him. For him to show up in Brooklyn, like, as I've been saying, looking like he rolled out of bed, fat and out of shape, like a hot mess, and day one start dropping triple-doubles with 30 points in wins, has been remarkable, and he is in the conversation. I will give you that. Harden's in the conversation, but not at the very top of the list. That's for the big man who did it again last night, who's dominating a league right now where I thought it was impossible for an old-school, back-to-the-basket type center to dominate the league, but he's doing it. He's the best player in basketball so far, from beginning to end, the most valuable in the year 2021.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Derek Carr's name has cropped in trade rumors annually around this time, ever since John Gruden took the Raiders coaching job in 2018. And, of course, since Russell Wilson expressed through his agent to Adam Schefter that Vegas would be a desired location. Raiders GM Mike Mayock is singing the praises of his quarterback.
I think Derek Carr had his best year yet under John Gruden. I think he's one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL, and we couldn't be happier with him. I think John and I would both stand shoulder to shoulder and pound the table for Derek Carr.
Max, should the Raiders move on from Carr?
Only one reason, Molly, because Russell Wilson put the Raiders on his list. I think Derek Carr, at times in his career, has been, early on it looked like he was going to be an elite guy. He was a young ascending guy. Who would you have taken of the young guys other than maybe Andrew Luck, like over Derek Carr for a minute? And then it looked to me like, oh my God, I don't even know if this guy is a starter. And now I wouldn't say he's one of the top quarterbacks, but he is at least a solid starting NFL quarterback, if not a franchise one. I wouldn't say top 10, but not far off. And he has upside, so I get it. Why you wouldn't be looking to move on. Unless you have a Hall of Famer in his prime available to you. If you have a Hall of Fame quarterback in his prime, a guy that you're hoping Derek Carr may become. Like, in order for Derek Carr to be Russell Wilson, Derek Carr would have to get better than he is and then maintain that week in and week out, year in and year out, for what, half a decade? Russell Wilson's that guy now, a bird in the hand. And so, under normal circumstances, Stephen A., like if Deshaun Watson wasn't on the trade block, and Texans can say what they want, Deshaun Watson wants out. If Dak Prescott maybe potentially wouldn't be available, and I don't know if Dak is way better than Derek Carr. I think Dak's a little better than Derek Carr. And maybe, you know, with longer horizons in his career, maybe a little more upside even. And if Russell Wilson has you on his short list, I think I would be looking to upgrade. This is really not a knock against Carr, who at one point I said, remember, Molly, he wanted to fight me in the octagon because I said it looked like he'd quit on the team. My opinion has drastically changed since then based on his play. But Russell Wilson's available, and Derek Carr ain't Russell Wilson.
I mean, why don't you step out there? I mean, why don't you just tell us the sky is blue, Max Kellerman? Who the hell don't know that if you can get Russell Wilson, you pass up on Derek Carr? Who don't know that? So what are you willing to give up for him? Because you don't get Russell Wilson for nothing. Could you be specific about what you would be willing to give up if you're the Las Vegas Raiders in order to get Russell Wilson? Because everybody and their grandmother knows. If you have to pick between Derek Carr and Russell Wilson, you pick Russell Wilson. Really, way to step out there, Max. Your bravery is admirable. I mean, my God, what is it to step out on a limb like that? Could you tell us what you're willing to surrender in order to get him? Could you give us that?
I was answering a question.
I'm just saying. I mean, could you tell us what you're willing to give up, though? Because you got to give up something to get them. What are you willing to give up? Three first-round picks? Two? What is it?
Well, what can you turn Derek Carr into? Can you turn Derek Carr at least into a first-round pick? Given what Stafford got, given the fact that Wentz just got a second and a third, you'd think you get a first and something at this point for Derek Carr. Would I throw in another first-round pick and some stuff for Russell Wilson? Yes, I would.
Okay, that's everybody. So I'm not going to disagree with you there. What I would say to you, however, is that I don't know if the Raiders have the necessary assets to get somebody like Russell Wilson, and that's why I'm comfortable with saying stick with Derek Carr. Derek Carr, over the last 3 years, we must have forgot. Dude has thrown for over 4,000 yards the last 3 years. He's completed 69, 70, and 67% of his passes in that span. The year before, he only threw 8 interceptions. This year, he only threw 9 interceptions, but increased his touchdown percentage by 6. He went from 21 touchdown passes to 27 touchdown passes. I think he's going in the right direction, which is why I don't blame them for having the kind of attitude, or Mike Mayock speaking about him the way that he did. Derek Carr has stepped up and he's shown that he's no scrub. Now, there have been times that I've looked at him and I said, damn, what is he thinking? How could he make that mistake? But then again, he'd show up and make a big play here and there and shows that he can play some football. So I don't really knock him, but I look at the weapons that the Raiders have had available to them. Josh Jacobs, I like him coming out of your backfield. You know how I feel about Waller. I think he's the third best tight end in football. Ruggs, I like the fact that they drafted him. He's a speedster. Don't get me started with the game they lucked up and won against the New York Jets because Greg Williams decided to play man up and didn't have anybody, you know, covering out. They didn't have any help for the corner whatsoever at the last play, damn near the last play of the game, which is just embarrassing, which got him fired as defensive coordinator, Adam Gase's team at the time, by the way. But in the end, I look at Derek Carr and I say, You could do a lot worse. And if you're moving in a forward direction, here's the only time you really, really make a move, when you know that you're comfortable with all the other pieces that you have in place in order to bring that quarterback and to sacrifice or potentially mortgage some of your future because you're going for it now. I don't know if we're at that place with the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't know if we should feel that good about their defense. I don't know if we should feel that good about John Gruden's system in order to get to a point where we're willing to say we should mortgage our future and do everything we can just to get Russell Wilson, because that's all we'll need. I'm not sure that's the case with the Las Vegas Raiders right now. And that's why I say just roll with Carr, because I don't think Carr has been that bad, and I think that he's improved over the last couple of years, and he deserves enough to have faith in him.
Now, do you think you're going to win a Super Bowl with Derek Carr in the near future?
No.
You know, there's a tie in the affairs of men, Stephen A. The Raiders, well, I don't know. I think you could. The Raiders have been, and also what's Gruden's influence been on Carr that we now feel this way about Carr, and what would happen if you gave him Russell Wilson? I think the Raiders have been stuck in this position for a very long time now. There were times where they popped their head up before they moved to Vegas, and you thought, oh, remember they went undefeated in the division one year, they only had like an 8-8 record, but they beat all the divisional rivals, and you thought, hey, something's happening with the Raiders. And they had a really good offensive line another year, and then something's happening with the Raiders. They're going to take the next step. They never, even this year, they were your sleeper pick for the Super Bowl. I mean, like sleeper pick. Both of us had a sleeper pick. I had Miami, you had the Raiders. But I understood why you took them. They always have the look like they're about to do it, and they're sort of stuck in neutral. They need to take that next step. I think if Russell Wilson's available, you can take the next step with him if you're John Gruden and Las Vegas.
All right. I'll leave you with this. Over the past two seasons, he was the second most accurate passer in the league, guys, the past 2 years, just behind Drew Brees. He had his best QBR of his seven-year career, which was a 70 last year. So great improvement under Gruden.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.